Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to the Talking Information Center. Today is August 20th, 2026, and I will be reading from the Associated Press World News. The title, "The Moscow Region is Hit by a Drone Blitz as Russian Missiles Kill 10 in a Ukrainian Village," by Hannah Arova and Barry Hatton. Updated August 18th, 2026. Kyiv, Ukraine. Ukrainian forces launched one of their biggest drone attacks on Russia since Moscow's invasion over 4 years ago, firing almost 800 drones only 2 days after a similar salvo, officials said Tuesday. Meanwhile, a Russian missile strike on a village in northeastern Ukraine's Kharkiv region killed at least 10 people and wounded 17 others as the barrage demolished homes, officials said. The countries are locked in an escalating duel of long-range aerial strikes, fighting on the roughly 1,250-kilometer front line in eastern and southern Ukraine is restricted by large number of drones and ground robots threatening troop movements, and neither side is making significant battlefield progress, analysts say. Putin resists pressure for peace talks. In the past year, Ukraine has devised and deployed domestically produced long-range drones for strikes deep inside Russia. Its drone technology has impressed governments and defense manufacturers around the world. Officials in Kyiv aim to make the Russian public feel the war's consequences and pressure Russian President Vladimir Putin into negotiating a peace settlement. Putin has so far shown no sign he intends to stop the invasion. Putin continues to drag out the war instead of accepting Ukraine's realistic ceasefire proposals and ending the bloodshed. Ukrainian Foreign Minister Andrei Sybiha said in a post on X. Russian air defenses overnight intercepted 791 Ukrainian drones over a number of regions, as well as annexed Crimea and the Black and the Azov Seas, the defense ministry in Moscow said, in what was the second largest drone attack since January 2025, according to an Associated Press tally. More than 600 Ukrainian drones flew toward the Moscow region, where 180 were shot down, Moscow Mayor Sergei Sobyanin said, without elaborating. Officials reported no deaths or major damage. Ukraine has increasingly launched swarms of hundreds of drones to try to overwhelm Russian air defenses. In the region that surrounds the capital, 3 people were wounded, Governor Andrei Vorobov said. 3 people were also wounded in the adjacent Ryazan region, where 3 private homes were damaged, Governor Pavel Malkov said. The overnight attack started a fire at a warehouse of wild berries, Russia's biggest online retailer in an industrial zone, Ukraine has repeatedly targeted the company, which it says helps supply the Russian military, an allegation Moscow denies. Wildberries said its facilities sustained insignificant damage. Ukraine strikes Wildberries sites in Russia and annexed Crimea. Logistical centers and warehouses belonging to Russia's biggest online retailer are hit by drones. Russian TV doesn't report news of the attack. Coverage of the attack in state and Kremlin-backed Russian media was mostly muted, as is often the case. Russia's main TV channels, state-run Russia 1 and Channel 1, did not mention the attack at all in their morning news bulletins. But Russian state news agency RIA Novosti featured it among the main news on its website's homepage, describing it as one of the most large-scale attacks on Moscow since the beginning of the summer. State newspaper Rossiyskaya Gazette on its website prominently featured a roundup of what Moscow regional governor Andrei Vorobov reported about the attack, describing it as massive in the headline. Pro-Kremlin tabloid MK featured a news brief about it on its home page. Zelensky accuses Russia of a brutal attack on civilians. A Russian missile strike on the village of Pechenihi in Ukraine's Kharkiv region killed 10 civilians, according to preliminary information, said Oli Senahubov, head of the Kharkiv Regional Military Administration. Another 17 people were wounded, he said. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky called it a brutal attack that damaged 10 homes, a cafe, a post office, a store, and at least 7 vehicles, according to Senahubov. We will definitely respond to this Russian strike, he said on social media. Also, 3 people were killed and 3 others were wounded over the past day in Russian attacks on Ukraine's Sumy region, Ukraine's national police said. UK vows continued Ukraine's support. British Prime Minister Andy Burnham, who took office last month, said the UK will continue to stand by Ukraine after Russia said that Kyiv's reported use of British drones for attacks on Russian soil would bring unidentified consequences. We are providing support so that Ukraine can defend itself, and that's been the British position all the way through this conflict by previous prime ministers, Burnham said. It remains the case with me. British newspaper The Sunday Times reported that 2 UK companies made drones used by Ukraine to hit Russia. Following the report, the Russian embassy in the UK said in a statement that London's actions will inevitably carry consequences. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov told Russian state TV that Moscow has the right to view British involvement in strikes on Russian territory as participation in the war, with all the ensuing consequences. Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to the Talking Information Center. Today is August 20th, 2026. My name is Dorothy, and I will be reading an Associated Press article from World News. The title, Prince Harry and Meghan are returning to the UK with their children. By Danica Kirka and James Pollard. Updated August 20th, 2026, London. Prince Harry and his wife Meghan have decided to return to the United Kingdom for an extended stay starting this fall, but they won't resume their roles as working members of the royal family, the Associated Press learned Wednesday. The couple's children, Prince Archie, 7, and Prince Lilibet, 5, have already enrolled at British schools and will start classes in September, according to a person close to the Sussexes who was not authorized to speak publicly. The family plans to live at a private, non-royal residence outside of London, but plans to maintain their home in Montecito, California, and their vacation property in Portugal. The Daily Telegraph first reported the story. When asked to discuss the reports by the AP at a roundtable event with U.S. veterans in Washington Wednesday night, Harry replied, "Nothing to say." Harry and Meghan gave up their royal duties and moved to California more than 6 years ago to earn their living through lucrative contracts with Netflix and Spotify. Although relations with the rest of the royal family have soured since then, Harry has recently expressed an interest in reconciliation so he could spend more time with his father, King Charles III, who is being treated for an undisclosed form of cancer. Charles was informed of the couple's plans on Sunday. Harry and Meghan visited the UK last month. Buckingham Palace has a policy of not commenting on speculation about non-working members of the royal family. A representative for Harry and Meghan declined to comment. According to a source close to the Sussexes, Meghan will continue heading her as ever company from the UK, while Harry can spend more time working with his UK-based charities. Harry and Meghan have had a stormy relationship with the royal family ever since they decamped to a mansion in the exclusive Southern California enclave of Montecito. In a series of interviews and Harry's memoir, Spare, the couple said they left Britain to escape the restrictions of royal life and criticized palace officials for being insensitive to Meghan's mental health, while alleging that at least one member of the royal family had expressed racist views when she was pregnant with their first child. Meghan describes herself as biracial. Those tensions were exasperated by Harry's long-running legal battle with Britain's tabloid newspapers, which he alleges illegally hacked his phones and invaded his privacy when he was younger. The prince recently lost a lawsuit against the publisher of the Daily Mail, though he won a 2023 judgment that condemned the publisher of the Daily Mirror for phone hacking. He also reached a settlement with the publisher of The Sun, which apologized for intruding on his life and agreed to pay substantial damages. The latest trial has left Harry facing a potential bill for millions of pounds after the court ruled he and other plaintiffs in the case were liable for the publisher's legal fees. Associated Newspapers has filed documents showing that its legal costs amounted to £34.5 million, or $47 million. Harry has also been embroiled in a legal wrangle with the British government after a government committee refused to authorize police protection for the prince and his family when they are in the UK. The prince says he and his family need armed police protection because they are at risk simply because they are members of the royal family, regardless of whether they are working royals. After losing a court battle over the security issue last year, Harry said he hoped to rebuild relations with his family. "I would love reconciliation with my family. There's no point in continuing to fight anymore," Harry told the BBC. "I don't know how much longer my father has." Last month, Harry returned to the UK for a series of charity engagements. Meghan and the children joined Harry for part of the visit, and they spent time with the king at his Highgrove estate in western England. It was the first time Archie and Lilibet had seen their grandfather since the late Queen Elizabeth II's Platinum Jubilee in 2022. While Harry has recently met with his father, there are no signs of a warming of relations with his brother, Prince William, the heir to the throne. Peter Hunt, a former BBC royal correspondent, said the surprise announcement would make William apoplectic. In the short term, Harry will be able to deepen his rapprochement with his father, Hunt told Britain's Press Association, and his presence back home will make it harder for his brother to duck a reconciliation. Hello, everyone. My name is Dorothy, and thank you for tuning in to the Talking Information Center. Today is August 20th, 2026, and I will be reading from the Associated Press World News. The title, North Korea Fires Barrage of Missiles Toward the Sea After Dismissing Overture from Trump. By Hung Jin Kim. So, August 20th, 2026. Seoul, South Korea. North Korea launched a barrage of ballistic missiles toward the sea on Thursday, South Korea's military said, a day after the North shrugged off a U.S. decision to scale back military drills with South Korea in an apparent bid to resume diplomacy. The Joint Chiefs of Staff said the launches of about 10 short-range ballistic missiles happened from North Korea's capital region around 5 p.m. on Thursday. The military said the missiles flew about 300 kilometers, or 185 miles, each toward North Korea's eastern waters. The military said South Korea has bolstered its surveillance posture and was closely coordinating information on the launches with the U.S. and Japan. South Korea's Presidential National Security Council issued a statement urging North Korea to halt ballistic missile launches. The Japanese Prime Minister's office had earlier said that it detected a suspected missile launch. U.S. President Donald Trump earlier ordered the Pentagon to substantially reduce the Alki Freedom Shield exercises just before they began Monday. Trump cited what he said was a good relationship with Kim and South Korea's refusal to support him over the war in Iran. On Wednesday, the South Korean and U.S. militaries confirmed they shortened the 11-day drills by shortening their duration by about half and canceling some field training exercises. The reduction of the exercises raised worries about the Allies' joint defense posture. Kim Jong-un, the influential sister of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, dismissed Trump's overture later Wednesday, saying the provocative, aggressive nature of the drills won't change even though their duration and size were reduced. If the U.S. calculates that it can propagate its recent measure as the one of so-called good faith, they will not get the desired answer, she said in a statement. She denied Trump's claim that Kim Jong-un had responded to his request for a conversation. Kim Yo-young still refrained from the typical North Korean reaction of fiery rhetoric and said personal relations between her brother and Trump are still excellent. That signals North Korea would want to wait for Trump to make bigger concessions before returning to talks. When asked by reporters Wednesday if he would be meeting with Kim Jong-un this year, Trump said that, yeah, I will be. He would answer a question about whether he is exchanging letters with Kim, but said he gets along with him. The Alki Freedom Shield is one of the main military exercises conducted by the U.S. and South Korea annually to enhance their ability to cope with potential North Korean aggression. Washington and Seoul say their drills are defensive in nature, but North Korea calls them an invasion rehearsal and often reacts with weapons tests. Before this month's drills started, North Korea accused the U.S. and South Korea of plotting more provocative exercises this summer and vowed to respond with a new level of a deterrent. Days before the drills start, North Korea fired two ballistic missiles into the sea in its first such launches since late June. Trump's earlier diplomacy with Kim Jong-un collapsed in 2019 due to disputes over how much sanctions relief North Korea should be given in return for dismantling its main nuclear complex, a limited denuclearization step. Kim has since shunned any talks with the U.S., pushed to modernize weapons arsenals, and expanded cooperation with Russia. Kim has said he won't place his nuclear program back on the negotiating table. Experts say Kim has more leverage than when he first held talks with Trump in 2018 and 2019. They say Kim likely hopes to eventually win international recognition as a nuclear state and extensive sanctions relief in exchange for only limited steps toward denuclearization. Hello, everyone. My name is Dorothy. Thank you for tuning in to the Talking Information Center. Today is August 20th, 2026, and I will be reading an Associated Press article from U.S. News. The title, Psychologist Testifies Lindsey Clancy Was Not Criminally Responsible in Killing of Her Three Children, by Michael Casey, updated August 19th, 2026. Plymouth, Massachusetts. Lindsey Clancy didn't appreciate the wrongfulness of killing her three children because of her mental health issues, a psychologist testifying for the defense said at her murder trial Wednesday. The testimony of Paul Zeisel is the strongest evidence yet to support the defense contentions that Clancy should not be held legally responsible for murder because she has bipolar disorder and was in the grip of a rare mental illness called postpartum psychosis when she killed her three children before trying to kill herself. Zeisel began seeing Clancy as a patient at a hospital after the deaths. She was unable to conform her behavior to the rule of law. She had no appreciation for the wrongfulness of her act, Zeisel said, adding that she had a mental disease or a defect. Clancy, 36, has pleaded not guilty to murder charges in the deaths of Callan, Dawson, and Cora Clancy, who ranged from 8 months to 5 years old. Postpartum psychosis is linked to the stress, sleep deprivation, and hormonal changes that follow childbirth. Researchers estimate that the condition, which is more serious and less common than postpartum depression, afflicts 1 to 2 per 1,000 women after delivery. Prosecutors say the former labor and delivery nurse planned the January 2023 killings and contrived to get her husband out of the house by sending him to pick up medicine for one of their children and dinner for the family. Clancy was not getting better. Zeisel, who said he spent more than 35 hours with Clancy over dozens of visits and reviewed her medical records, said she went to a perinatal clinic in December 2022 because she felt her brain was damaged. She should kill herself and that she is never going to get any better. She also showed signs of psychosis, was paranoid, and feared that people could hear her thoughts and that she would lose her children. She was worried that her children would be removed from her and that she would never see them again, he said. But just because she was in a psychotic state, Zeisel said, that didn't mean she couldn't do everyday tasks of living, like driving and searching the internet, a reference to the fact that the day of the killing, she took her daughter to the doctor, played with the children in the snow, and searched online for a pharmacy and a restaurant. So the fact she is not talking about the unicorns in the corner, she is not slurring her words, and she is not unable to walk, to your opinion, to a degree of medical certainty, does that mean she is not in a psychotic state? Clancy's attorney, Kevin Reddington, asked. Zeisel responded, it does not. Prosecution challenges Zeisel's credibility. On cross-examination, prosecutors pointed out mistakes Zeisel made in his report about Clancy and questioned whether he could be objective about her diagnosis when he was seeing her as a patient and working with the defense, including appearing with Reddington at a news conference. Zeisel acknowledged that there was nothing in Clancy's medical records in which she reports hearing voices telling her to kill herself, only that she told her caregivers that she wanted to die. Prosecutors have questioned the seriousness of Clancy's suicide attempt. After strangling her children, Clancy jumped from a second-story window and remains paralyzed from the waist down. Prosecution brings up the children's birthdays. Prosecutor Shannon Buckingham also read from daily reports from Tewksbury Hospital, the state psychiatric hospital where Clancy stays, that included the anniversary of the killings and what would have been her children's birthdays. Those reports mentioned her parents sometimes visiting or her talking with other patients, but they never mentioned anything she did to remember her children. Reddington asked Zeisel if he saw anything in the record from the hospital about her laughing and partying and having a good time while in the hospital. Lindsay Clancy has bad days and worse days, Zeisel said. Zeisel also said Clancy often talks about her children, aiming to dispel prosecutors' contention that she never mentions them. She really loves them and misses them and thinks of them every single day, almost every moment of the day, Zeisel said. If convicted of murder, Clancy faces life in prison without parole. If found not guilty because of a lack of criminal responsibility, she would be committed to a state mental facility. Hello, everyone. My name is Dorothy. Thank you for tuning in to the Talking Information Center. Today is August 20th, 2026, and I'll be reading from the Associated Press an article from Business. The title, Pressure Builds Anew in the Bond Market as Walmart Drags the U.S. Stock Market Lower, by Stan Cho, updated 12:21 p.m. August 20th, 2026. New York. A rise in oil prices on Thursday is sending worries about inflation and yields in the bond market higher, erasing some of the relief the U.S. Treasury Department created the day before. A drop for Walmart following its latest profit report helped drag the U.S. stock market lower. The S&P 500 slipped 0.3% and is on track for a fourth loss in the 5 days since setting its all-time high last week. The Dow Jones Industrial Average was down 344 points, or 0.6%, as of 11:30 a.m. Eastern Time. And the NASDAQ composite was 0.8% lower. The bond market remains the center of action after yields charged higher through the summer on worries about high inflation, gargantuan government debts, and other factors. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent made a move Wednesday that jolted financial markets to at least double the size of his department's planned purchases of longer-term treasuries from September 9th through November 4th. That helped push yields down after the 10-year treasury's yield had hit its highest level in more than a year, and the 30-year yield got back to where it was in 2007, before the Great Recession sent yields towards zero worldwide. It's a big deal because high yields slow the economy by raising interest payments for people, companies, and the government, and they can undercut prices for stocks and other investments. But analysts had cautioned the effect may be short-lived, given how small the purchases are relative to the overall size of the treasury market and how they don't fix the fundamental concerns of investors that had driven up yields. Plus, more signals arrived quickly to push worries higher. The U.S. government's debt topped $40 trillion on Wednesday, a staggering record that arrived just months after the national debt first blew past the $39 trillion mark in April, because Washington continues to spend far more money than it brings in. And on Thursday, the price for a barrel of Brent crude climbed 1.9% to $93.35 as uncertainty continues about when the war with Iran will allow oil tankers to freely exit the Persian Gulf again. President Donald Trump threatened Iran with the most crushing economic operation ever taken against any country late Wednesday, but provided few details. That helped push the 10-year Treasury yield up to 4.70% from 4.65% late Wednesday. It's almost back to its 4.71% level from late Tuesday, before the Treasury Department made its announcement. A couple encouraging reports on the U.S. economy also helped push up longer-term Treasury yields, which move with expectations for the economy and inflation in coming years. One said fewer U.S. workers applied for unemployment benefits last week than economists expected. while another said, manufacturing in the mid-Atlantic region appears to be much stronger than expected. On Wall Street, Walmart was one of the heaviest weights on the S&P 500 and fell 9.4%, even though it reported stronger profit and revenue for the latest quarter than analysts expected. Investors focused instead on how an important underlying measure of revenue growth at its stores slowed again. Its forecast for profit in the current quarter also fell short of analysts' expectations. Given its massive size, Walmart offers a look at how shoppers are doing across the United States. A surprisingly weak update on sales at U.S. retailers overall last month had raised worries that shoppers may be succumbing to pressure from high inflation and a job market that may be looking less solid. Advance Auto Parts tumbled 23.1% after the retailer reported weaker revenue for the latest quarter, even though its profit topped expectations. CEO Shane O'Kelly said that tighter household budgets constrained spending more than we anticipated, especially during the last 4 weeks of the quarter. Spending by U.S. consumers is the main engine of the economy, and a pullback by them could exacerbate what's already a slowdown in growth for the economy. A pullback could also mean a double whammy for travel companies, which would see fewer bookings when they have to pay higher prices for fuel. Norwegian Cruise Line Holdings fell 4.9%, while United Airlines sank 2.4%, and American Airlines lost 2.5%. Helping to keep Wall Street's losses in check was Deere, which reported stronger profit and revenue for the latest quarter than analysts expected. It rose 8.7% as the company said order trends indicate the agricultural equipment business looks set to accelerate after this year. Oil companies also rose with the gains for crude prices. ExxonMobil added 2.1% and ConocoPhillips climbed 3.6%. In stock markets abroad, indexes were mixed in Europe following a stronger finish in Asia. South Korea's KOSPI soared 5.9% for one of the world's biggest moves after the two tech titans that dominate its market, Samsung Electronics and SK Hynix, jumped. Such swings have become more common for Seoul's market, which has borne the brunt of rising and falling worries that winning stocks in the artificial intelligence boom may have shot too high. Hello, everyone. My name is Dorothy, and I'd like to thank you for tuning into the Talking Information Center. Today is August 20th, 2026, and I will be reading an Associated Press article from U.S. News. The title, Truckload of Squid Spills into the Street in Rhode Island. Creating a smelly mess in the summer heat. by Josh Kelly, updated August 19th, 2026. A tractor-trailer rollover sent a truckload of squid spilling into a Rhode Island roadway, leaving a stench as they sat in the road for hours in the summer heat. Local authorities have dubbed it the Squidpocalypse of 26. It was a warm, sunny day in the coastal town of Narragansett when the spill happened Sunday. And Narragansett Police Captain Ryan Prest said he was told that the scene started to smell bad as the squid sat out in the sun for a few hours. The fully loaded trailer was taking the squid to a processing facility out of town when the trailer dislodged and tipped on its side as the driver was navigating a turn, spilling a substantial portion of its calamari cargo, that the police department said in a statement. Police responded at 9:27 a.m., and the intersection wasn't reopened until 5:15 p.m., authorities said. Video of the scene showed a trailer on its side and massive piles of squid on the road. Squid has a distinctive odor to it, Richard Stevens, a Narragansett resident and fisherman, told WJAR. It can be very foul-smelling, especially if it lands on the road and stays there for a while. Heavy equipment and a dump truck were used to remove the squid, Press said. The driver and a passenger in the truck cab weren't injured, and no other vehicles were involved, Press said. The Rhode Island State Police Commercial Enforcement Unit is investigating, but it's unclear if any enforcement action will be taken, Press said. We have not issued any citations, Press said. I'm not sure if there will be any citations issued by the state police. State police did not immediately respond to a request for comment. The Narragansett Police Department made light of the situation in a social media post on Wednesday, stating that the town is still recovering from the Squidpocalypse of 26, the spill that put slippery when wet to shame. Hello, everyone. My name is Dorothy, and I want to thank you for tuning in to the Talking Information Center. Today is August 20th, 2026, and I will be reading an Associated Press article from their health section. The title, New CDC Director Acknowledges Agency Problems in First Large Staff Meeting, by Mike Stobe, updated August 19th, 2026, New York. In her first large staff meeting, the new director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention promised Wednesday to advocate for the agency while acknowledging that congressionally funded programs lacked staff and employees were feeling burned out. Dr. Erica Schwartz also said she wouldn't hesitate to disagree with U.S. Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. if necessary, but said she wouldn't do so publicly. Schwartz started at the head of the Atlanta-based federal agency last week taking the reins from a series of temporary directors. She spoke to CDC employees Wednesday at her first all-hands staff meeting. The Associated Press heard a recording of the meeting. Schwartz mentioned an AP story this week about CDC programs that have congressional appropriations but functionally are dead or nearly dead because the CDC staffers who did the work were laid off by President Donald Trump's administration or remain on leave. She did not say exactly what she will do about these zombie programs and about staffers who feel exhausted and overloaded, but said she will meet with CDC staffers to learn more about the situation and about what can be done. "The good news is I'm here," she said. "I'm week one of being here, and now I can certainly be able to advocate for the CDC. I think when you have had that leadership vacuum, it's hard to get that advocacy." Schwartz previously served in uniformed government jobs with the U.S. Coast Guard and the U.S. Public Health Service. When she disagrees with other leaders, she does so in private, because that's just part of the uniformed service person in me, she said. She said she would continue to do so, but not in front of the media. She also promised to build public trust in the agency through radical transparency, scientific rigor, and honest communications, echoing language used by Kennedy. Schwartz is the 22nd leader of the CDC, which is charged with protecting Americans from preventable health threats. In her talk Wednesday, she acknowledged the challenges agency employees have faced, largely due to layoffs and resignations. The agency has lost 3,000-plus employees, more than one-quarter of its workforce. Morale has plummeted as a succession of mostly temporary leaders has come and gone. The front office has been staffed by political appointees with little or no training in medicine or public health. Kennedy, a leading voice in the anti-vaccine movement, took several steps that ran counter to CDC research and recommendations, including disbanding an expert advisory committee and appointing his own panel that included several vaccine skeptics. CDC staffers asked questions Wednesday, including one about Trump's executive order calling for revamped childhood vaccine recommendations that promote his long-held but discredited theory that childhood shots should be spaced out into separate medical visits. Schwartz said a task force on childhood vaccine safety is being established, and she is on the panel. It has not met yet, she said. The panel has been given 90 days to report to Trump, she added. Some current and former CDC employees said Schwartz appeared to be earnest, but want to see what she does. The National Public Health Coalition, an organization of former or current CDC workers, issued a statement after the meeting. CDC staff and the American people deserve a strong, independent leader who will follow the science, defend public health expertise, and put the health and safety of the public ahead of political pressure, the statement said. Dr. Schwartz has spoken about rebuilding trust. That trust must be earned through action. Hello, everyone. I'd like to thank you for joining me and for tuning in to the Talking Information Center. Today is August 20th, 2026. I'll be reading an article from the Associated Press U.S. News. The title, How This Massachusetts Sanctuary Takes in Hundreds of Guinea Pigs from Across the U.S. by Kimberly Cruzy. Updated August 18th, 2026. Salisbury, Massachusetts. Kimmy Smotherman begins each day greeted by the squeals, chirps, and purrs of nearly 400 guinea pigs. Depending on who you ask, tending to the daily barrage of guinea pig needs can be either a fairy tale or a horror show. For Smotherman, it's often a mix of both. If I could figure out how to get out of this at this point, I probably would, Smotherman joked. But I do believe that to a certain extent, I probably wouldn't get out of bed if I didn't have this. Smotherman is the owner of the Guinea Pig Sanctuary in Salisbury, Massachusetts, roughly 40 miles north of Boston. On any given day, 350 to 400 guinea pigs are housed in a modest workspace split into cages stacked from the floor to ceiling. The space is cramped and chaotic as volunteers and visitors squeeze past each other between the rows of cages in a converted office space. People constantly move throughout the space, cleaning out cages and checking on any sick animals. But there's also joy. The squeals from the little piggies about to eat lettuce and other vegetation often spark laughter, while others cuddle and comfort some of the guinea pigs. Each animal has a name prominently displayed outside their cage, as volunteers tick off their personalities. Maui is friendly and gives kisses. Gritty is older but shy. Rio has spunk and likes to run around. They all remember the smell of their caretakers and gravitate toward their favorites. They're very sensitive animals, said Janet Woodman, a volunteer at the nonprofit. I personally think they are probably the best therapy animal next to a horse. Smotherman's operation is one of a handful of animal rescues in the U.S. devoted solely to taking in abandoned guinea pigs, filling a need as people become overwhelmed with the responsibilities required to take care of these pets. The sanctuary additionally offers boarding for guinea pigs when their owners are traveling, as well as encouraging rehoming of the animals when they can. Measuring between 8 to 10 inches, long these small beasts originally came from South America, derived from the Cavia porcellus species, according to the Smithsonian's National Zoo. After being domesticated in 5000 BC, there are now 13 different breeds that are distributed as both pets and for food. According to Smotherman, guinea pigs often need to be adopted in pairs. They're social and can't be kept in cages full-time. Within minutes of opening the sanctuary earlier this year, an older woman walked through the door carrying two cages, needing to surrender her guinea pigs. The woman's husband had become sick, she explained to Smotherman, and she couldn't properly take care of both him and her pets. Smotherman hugged the woman and waived the usual fee. I tell people, just bring them here, she said, if that's what you need to do. I'll take on the responsibility. Other days, Smotherman is fielding calls from across the U.S., asking if she can take 11 piggies from Illinois, 7 from Texas, and 97 from New York, where nearly half are expected to have babies. It's a constant stress that Smotherman never imagined would consume her life. It initially began when her grandson, Alex, brought home a guinea pig. Alex had fallen into a fire as a child and experienced health problems, causing him to avoid most animals up until he was 12, when he discovered it was safe to interact with guinea pigs. From there, Smotherman said, her family became a resource to take in abandoned guinea pigs. The family ran the rescue out of their New Hampshire house until a fatal fire burned it down in 2019. The fire resulted in the loss of Smotherman's other grandson, 2 dogs, and dozens of guinea pigs. The tragedy sent Smotherman into a depression. But when her family was living out of a hotel as they looked for a new home, people still kept dropping off guinea pigs that needed help. Seeing the need gave Smotherman and her family the focus and motivation to continue Alex's dream, and eventually they relocated to Massachusetts. Smotherman says the work is hard. She only gets a handful of days off a year, but the constant drumbeat of needing to take care of hundreds, if not thousands, of guinea pigs keeps her grounded. That's all the time we have for today, but I thank you for listening to the Talking Information Center.